raise a couple more to the revolution.
We have only three words for you.
Uh-oh.
We're taking over!
The world we're alive.
Why not raise a little hay?
Welcome to the Q0 Theater Cast. This is your host and artistic director, Dan Pelletier. Well, excited to be back recording as we start season 5. We've got a little peek behind the scenes for our first main stage production, Blood Relations. I'm here with our director, Brian. Say hello to the good people, Brian.
Hello, this is the sound of my voice.
Excellent. So you guys have been in rehearsals for a couple weeks now, and it was our first chance we've gotten to sit down and talk. So maybe
thanks to the weather.
Yeah. Maybe if you could give a short little summary of just what Blood Relations is, and then we can talk about kind of what you guys have been doing in rehearsals so far.
Sure. Blood Relations by Canadian playwright Sharon Pollock. It is about the Lizzie Borden murders from 1892 in Fall River, Massachusetts. Kind of a New England legend to it, and it's one of my absolute favorite plays, and I'm really looking forward to folks seeing it.
Awesome. Yeah, very popular subject matter, true crime always in the zeitgeist, and especially, with it just being, not far from here. How far is the Lizzie Borden house?
That's about an hour drive,
yeah,
I think, from here.
So definitely local legend, local...
Yeah. I've had people ask me, because this is a case from 1892, and they say, why the rush? And I say, theater is about the now, so we have to, jump on it when the iron is hot. Yeah. So, otherwise, why are we doing this, Dan?
Right. It is a fascinating case. I think we had discussed, just the two of us earlier, I was listening to a podcast about the Borden murders, and they're like, it's an unsolved case because...
Technically speaking.
Right. Lizzie got off, and we still, from a legal standpoint, don't know who did it.
Yeah, no one else was ever arrested.
Yeah, and they say that, there's... But how could somebody else have done it? But also, how could she have done it? So there are a lot of questions that to this day, and I think that really intrigues people, especially the familial aspect to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions, and some of which we are attempting to try to answer.
So let's, rather than, the play, talk about the work you've been doing in rehearsals. So you've got your cast, you guys have been rehearsing for a few weeks. Talk to us about, what that process has been like so far.
Sure. The first couple of weeks, we stuck to Zoom, and really just kept it to a lot of character work and kind of talking about the play, and talking about some of the tenets and the principles of the production that I kind of wanted to get across, some of which were certain things like no blackouts. That was kind of my number one. I'm not really that crazy about blackouts. So I just say, it's an excuse for an audience to suddenly start clapping, and half the time I want to say, we haven't done anything yet. What are you clapping for? So that was the first thing. Other principles, like I actually came out with 10 of them. That I even have the, I just pulled up the list here. The second one is film acting. Because we're kind of like in a very intimate space, I thought it would be really great to explore something that's more akin to film acting, because I think we're close enough to the audience that expressions in their faces will really come across more. So I kind of want to lean folks into that way. As I stated, people do not struggle to show their emotions; they struggle to hide them. So we kind of really want to lean into that with this, because this is a family that very much is about hiding their emotions from each other. That stiff Victorian times. Likewise, number three was restrictions in terms of not only the fashion of the time. People in corsets couldn't really move very well. The heavy wool clothing in the middle of the summer couldn't really, all these kind of restrictions physically and even socially for this. This was a family in the 1%, something that we want to explore. Inserting facts among the fiction. Like I said, those kind of answering some of those unanswered questions. and some of the facts that weren't really written into the play, but that actually did happen, at least want to kind of make reference to them. And if there are sort of discrepancies between the reality and the story, then it's done for a reason. And I think as one of the things that intrigued me kind of about that, about the play in the first place, also the idea of fuzzy immersion. We want the audience to kind of be in the world of the play before they even know that they're in the play, as well. We're trying to explore with characters through physicality a lot, and just sort of the subtle, because we have a lot of actors playing multiple roles. So there'll be physical differences sort of between how they stand and how they sit. And can we tell which character they're being just by how they're standing? So we're exploring a lot of physicality that way. And I want it to be very well researched. I think I've shown you the protocol, dramaturg's protocol that I had, for folks that don't know what that is. That's essentially a study guide that a dramaturg makes for a particular production with all the background information and analysis and history, of the play, the playwright, the story, and so on. And with this play, we're dealing with a lot of unreliable narrators. And again, for a reason that we're kind of going to exploring, and some theories in there, again, about how she may have done it, things that might have happened that day that we don't know about, trying to fill in some of those gaps. And finally, ultimately, is more of a something for myself as a director, is a reason for everything. One of the things I've not liked about working with directors in the past is they do something just because it's fun. Oh, I just like it. Let's do that. No, if there's not sort of a legit reason for doing it, whether it be for something, for the audience or for the concept of the play, then I want people to call me out on it. And, because that'll keep me honest.
Hello, Q0 fans. Q0 business advisor and performer Jake Ranlett here, interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast to talk about Q0 sponsorship and membership. As I'm sure you know, theater is really expensive, and we cannot survive on ticket sales alone, which is why we have these two awesome programs that not only allow Q0 to continue to revolutionize the performing arts scene in New Hampshire, but has incredible benefits for you as well. Sponsors get their name and logo in our playbill, on our posters, mentioned in our podcasts, listed on our press releases, and so much more. We go out of our way to make sure everyone knows about you and thanks you for helping make Q0 possible. We also have our membership program for individuals who want a little bit more bang for their buck and a lot more Q0 in their lives. We have 10 different levels of membership, starting as low as $2 a month. Every level of membership comes with awesome perks, such as early access to the Q0 Theater Cast, discounts on tickets and merchandise, exclusive behind-the-scenes video content, the ability to read our new works blog, and so much more. The more you give, the more you get. If you want to be a vital part of the Q0 revolution, head on over to cztheater.com and click the Support CZT link to become a sponsor or a member today. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, I 1000% agree. We just had today, while you were rehearsing, our first ever directing workshop, and that was a concept we discussed that, like, for me, any decision being made has to be justified by the script. It has to make sense with the text and the story we're trying to tell, not for fun or whatever sort of effect. We're looking for a very specific reason for doing things. And I think with any show that's important, especially something like this where there is a unique style that you're coming at it with. So making sure that those are justified. So kind of, building off of that, so you very clearly had a very specific vision in mind with this show. How did that impact your casting choices and how you were able to put together this ensemble?
A lot of it came down to the chemistry between people. I mean, the people we got for auditions were great, and there were a lot of really tough decisions. And a couple of heartbreaking decisions, admittedly. But it really came down to, you know, as much as, you know, I liked one person in a particular role with maybe they did a monologue, when I put him in a scene with someone else, they didn't click as much as these two other people did. So yeah, it was really tough. But I am happy with the cast we got, and sorry for the cast we didn't get.
Yeah. I mean, that's something every time I think. The actors will never truly, you know, understand that until you're on the director's side of the table, just how much that chemistry makes the decisions for you. I'm remembering, I believe it was Neil Simon casting The Odd Couple, that his wife was sitting in on the callbacks, and she had commented, she's like, you know, the actors just seem to cast to themselves. You don't really have to do anything.
Yeah.
And that's right. Like, when you get the people and just having them read and work together, you can feel when something's clicking and feel when something's not.
Yeah, for two of the roles like that share a scene together, I didn't know who it was going to be until I saw those two people, you know, acting together. And I said, well, yep, that's them.
Yeah. And even, like, if you know everybody that's coming out for you, I think sometimes we're like, oh, that's good. So-and-so will probably fall into this, and the other person will fall into that. And then they get in the room, and you're like, oh, that's completely different. And if you go with your preconceived notions, you might be hurting yourself.
Yeah, I really, really want to check myself and make sure that I wasn't pre-casting in any way and just trying to come into it as cold as possible. Mm.
So what's been the biggest challenge so far? I mean, you know, it's a very dark and unique piece with a very unique presentation style. So what have been some challenges you've had, and how are you guys working to overcome them?
Yeah. Well, I think some of the biggest challenges is that, well, it is an incredibly heavy kind of emotional play. You know, there's not a lot of laughs in it, mm-hmm. we'll say. And kind of for that reason, I kind of try to keep the backstage light and maybe a little ridiculous. Because, you know, I don't want people to be abused,
right.
in this. You know, it's the family is very abusive as it is, but I certainly don't want my actors to feel that. So trying to create a community kind of with them. In fact, the mailbox that I just brought in, I kind of created you know, this little file folder. Everyone's got a slot in it, you know, yourself included, and put a bunch of blank cards and some construction paper and different pens. And for, you know, if they notice one of their cast members did something particularly cool, and they say, "Oh, I really love the way, you know, they did this deliberately, or you really nailed that scene," they can write it down in a physical format, you know, and put it in there, and their castmate now has mail, and you know, that's something that folks can even take with them, and maybe, you know, and look to it, you know, even years from now, like, you know, and have maybe good memories of it. So I just want to make it a very kind of nurturing, kind environment. The complete opposite of the context within the play.
Right. Is this an original concept of yours, or is this something you borrowed from somebody else for this kind of like ongoing thank you note or sort of type thing?
That thank you note, yeah, the mail was first done for me when I performed in A Midsummer Night's Dream back in 2001.
Oh.
So I've been sitting on this for like 22 years, and it was just such a wonderful, like a wonderful thing, like that the director had done. And it was an 8-man version of the play, and we were like writing notes to each other all the time because it helped us grow so close as a cast that I'm still in touch with most of them.
Wow.
In fact, really the only one that I'm not is because they passed away like 10 years ago,
right?
Unfortunately, we are all very close. Not only throughout the play, closer really than any cast that I think I'd ever been in before. And that was just one of the wonderful things about it. I'm like, you know, I want to bring that back. I think that's an element. I don't know. I can't guarantee that the cast will be that close as we were, but, you know, at least it might be a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, I can 1,000% understand where that would come from. It's great that you had that experience. And that's something I also try to emphasize to my directors. I mean, if you remember, I believe when, you know, you got this question, I always ask, what was the best experience you had working on a show, and what will you do to recreate that? So I think it's good that we want to, you know, take something that we've learned in another role as an actor and apply it to being a director. Now, kind of building off that, as someone who, you know, more often is an actor, you know, this is, you know, wearing the directing hat's a little bit of a shift for you. What would you say is the biggest challenge in going from directing to acting and acting to directing?
Ooh, from acting into directing is really making sure that I myself am not married to a particular way of saying a line and trying to, you know, to open. I may have, you know, as an actor, have in my mind, oh, this is how I know this would be done. But, it, you know, it would work differently for someone else, you know, for delivering that. And just trying to keep myself open enough and open-minded enough, you know, to let actors, you know, give that contribution. Because this is a collaborative art form. We were kind of talking about it with the new works the other day that, you know, the playwright's not the be-all, end-all. Actors want to contribute, so they have their own delivery. It may be different than what the playwright thought or even what the director originally thought. I think the director's goal is really to find what works, you know, and enjoy as much as they may have sort of a concept in mind and a desire how the show goes, be open enough that it can go in some other directions, you know, and you can make some lovely discoveries that way.
So you would not be good friends with David Mamet?
Probably not. Yeah, he's very, very constrictive about his ideas, and if you don't do it that way, yeah, you'd quickly be fired.
Yep. Heard plenty of story of him firing actors, pulling rights, being, you do it how I wanted it done.
There's a couple of playwrights in that time. I think Tennessee Williams, I know, put in his will that you can never perform any of his plays in part or do any cuttings. Mm. You have to do them complete.
Yeah.
Found that out because when I was in high school, we did the NHETG, the New Hampshire Educational Theater Guild. It was our very first year, and we were going to do a scene from Streetcar Named Desire. And then some lawyers called up us, a bunch of high school kids, and said, nope.
Yeah. And I understand it as a writer. Everyone is protective of their work, and it's scary sometimes putting it out there for other people.
Yeah, I'm very thankful that we've actually gotten some blessings from the Sharon Pollock estate. She passed away a few years ago, unfortunately, but when getting the rights in the first place, I was in contact with her daughter. And when I realized it was her daughter, I was like, oh, crap. You know, and she said, thank you so much for, you know, keeping her mother's legacy alive. And it's like, I'm more than happy to. And it feels nice that we kind of have their blessing on that. So
that's great.
I don't know if we'll be able to share it with them in any way, but, you know, at the very least, I hope Sharon Pollock would like it.
Mm. I mean, I think that'd be terrifying to have the playwright or their family show up.
Yeah.
You know, I joke that, like, if my directing mentor ever showed up to a show I've directed, I'm still not ready for that. Or I remember a story of, like, Stephen Sondheim driving down the street and popping into a middle school rehearsal of Into the Woods.
Oh.
Kids not knowing who he was, just like, hi, I'm Stephen Sondheim. And the teachers are all, like, freaking out. He's like, can I watch your rehearsal? And he, you know, giving notes, and I'm like, I can't even imagine.
Oh, wow.
But so, you know, we're, you know, a month and a half still away. What's the next step? Like, where are you guys at right now, and what do you hope to gain over your next couple of rehearsals?
Well, like, today we just finished blocking Act 2, so we do have kind of everything roughly blocked out. We've choreographed some of the more physical moments a little bit, so it's going to be about honing that. And once kind of folks get off book, then we can kind of really start delving into the characters more, you know, and experimenting and trying different ways to do different lines, and making it really creepy.
Yeah, especially the doldrums of winter. Let's terrify people more. Excellent. Any other thoughts that you want to, you know, share with people either about the process or the show? I mean, we'll do a couple more of these hopefully before we get to opening weekend, and I want to see how your thoughts evolve and how the actors surprise you. But final thoughts for this first interview.
Well, I'm loving the cast and sort of everything they're bringing to it. I mean, everyone seems on board with my, you know, harebrained ideas. You know, yourself included. That's why you asked me to do it in the first place, presumably. I'm just looking forward to the challenges that pop up. Some logistical, which we're kind of already in the process of doing. Just sort of exploring it even more, because each week that I read this play and see it played out, I'm even noticing more things. And I love that. It's one of the things I love about like a really good play, is the, you know, the continual exploration that I hope we'll be doing right up till the end of February, right before Tech Week.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, Brian. That's Blood Relations, opening March 1st through the 3rd, Arts Academy of New Hampshire. You can get tickets on our website or at the door. Looking forward to chatting again, hopefully this time next week.
Awesome. I'll be here.